ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget. And more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Jim Mars. And, of course, for many years, we've carried his book, They've Ruled by Secrecy, but now we're going to be carrying as well a follow-up to that, a fascinating book, very recently off the press, called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. And, of course, Jim has written extensively, about the background of the Nazi Party. And then, in fact, the misconception that when Germany was defeated back in 1945, that the Nazi movement was defeated, but they really weren't. They've continued, and so much information here. We talked about some of that last evening, and, of course, you'll certainly want to get a copy of that talk last evening, and I hope you'll want to get a copy of the talk we're going to give today. Hi, Jim. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Well, at least we have people out here who have a pretty good idea what's going on. I think our listeners are a lot better off, know a lot more than the average individual out there. But you bring out so much of the occult background of these various movements. This is the one thing that I think everybody else has missed, is the fact that there were occult forces behind the Nazi movement. There were occult forces behind what's going on today and the secret societies that still exist to this very day.
That's true. In fact, it's a historic fact that at the end of the war, when the Allied forces overran secret Nazi research labs and stuff, what did they find on the drawing board but flying saucers, flying discs? They came out with so much advanced technology that it's really just very fortuitous that the war ended when it did, because if it had lasted maybe even another 6 months, they might could have turned it all around. We talked last evening about how that it there is evidence that they actually did develop an atomic weapon, but it was just too late, so they swapped it to the United States in exchange for immunity. But they also had a lot of other exotic technology, and that always begs the question of where did that come from? And through the years, I have wondered and have heard stories that perhaps they the Nazis got hold of a flying saucer or some kind of UFO, and that they had back-engineered it to gain all this miraculous technology they got. But, Dr. Stan, every time I tried to track that, it just never did seem to go anywhere. And so I find out that it seems that the Nazis were so heavily involved into the occult, and that apparently that is beginning to show us where they actually came up with some of their advanced technology, is that by conducting what back then was called seances. Today, the U.S. Army, the CIA, the DIA have experimented with this psychic phenomenon. They call it remote viewing. It's contacting the universe, contacting perhaps other dimensions, other spiritual realms, And they had a program called Dr. Greenbaum. And this was their equivalent of remote viewers, except they didn't call them that. And apparently it was here that they were in touch with non-human intelligences, and they were able to pick up guides to this exotic technology that they were able to develop. And, of course, it would make one wonder, well, you know, who were they in touch with, and were these good,
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. My guest this afternoon is Jim Mars, and Jim has written a couple of books we carry, of course. One of them is called Ruled by Secrecy. If you haven't read it, it's an important book. But his latest book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, really is very important because it talks about the secret societies that threatened to take over America. And what is the relationship between the secret societies and the Nazi movement? Well, of course, as Jim points out in his book, the Nazis were deeply involved in the occult. And he was just saying that, I mean, there is so much exotic technology that the Nazis had. I mean, they had the plans for the flying saucers. Whether they ever produced them, we don't know. But certainly they had the plans for the atom bomb, and there's a great deal of evidence they actually had the atom bomb. But, of course, since they were convinced that the war was going to end, they were going to lose it, they weren't going to, of course, antagonize the Americans and the British by using it, because they knew that would lead, of course, to reprisals and the destruction of Germany and all of its people. So they actually had swapped their uranium and the plans and some of the fuses they had with the Americans. Fascinating material you won't read elsewhere. But Jim has this very well documented, extensively researched and extensively documented. But then, of course, Jim was just talking about how the Nazis had tapped into the supernatural, just as exactly as Thomas Edison and Tesla here in the United States had tapped into the supernatural to gain their information. So the Nazi scientists apparently had tapped into the supernatural as well. Is that correct, Jim?
Yes, that's true. Under a program that they called Dr. Greenbaum, a psychic program for contacting non-human intelligences. Interestingly enough, this was all under a super secret program that they call MAGIC, M-A-J-I-K in the German. And the reason that's really interesting is that, as you know, in the UFO research community where they study UFOs, there's the long-standing story that there is a small handful of men at the top of the power structure here in the United States that have had control and have kept the lid on the whole stories of UFOs through the years, and their earliest incarnation was as MAGIC, M-A-G-I-C. So it makes one wonder if perhaps, along with rocket scientists and mind control experts and psychiatric experts, that we picked up psychic experts from the Nazis as part of the trade-off at the end of World War II.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment. When we get back, I'm going to ask Jim to talk about the rat line. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Jim is talking about the Nazis who came to the West at the end of the Second World War. Now, this has been carefully kept from the American people. There was one program called Project Paperclip, and there was another one called the Rat Line. And the rat line, well, I'm going to let Jim tell you about these because it's vitally important. They have done everything they could to conceal the truth from the American people about the rat line, how the CIA knew about the rat line, the secret deals that were made with the Israelis. You often wonder why the Zionists didn't try to track down all the Nazis in South America. They got Klaus Barbie, they got Adolf Eichmann. But there were 60,000 of ruthless criminal Nazis who escaped to South America, and the Jews never tried to get them. And the question is, why? Well, anyway, you pick up the story because I mean, I've been studying this for 46 years, but I learned a lot from your book, Jim. It really is fascinating. It's one of those books you can't skim. You got to read it word for word. You pick up the story, first of all, maybe about the rat line. And then, of course, about Project Paperclip.
Right. Well, at the close of the war, the Nazis set up what became known as the rat lines, and I think that refers to the rope lines coming off of ships, that the rats will all, you know, if the ship's in trouble, the rats will all scurry and go overboard and desert the ship. And that's what was happening towards the end of the war. But it didn't happen all of a sudden. As far back as 1943, there were people in Germany who were already could see the writing on the wall, and they knew that it was very possible that Germany was going to lose the war, and they began to make plans for the survival of National Socialism, the political and racist philosophy. And so at the end of the war, when it was the Russians closed in from the east and the Allies closed in from the west, they really went into high gear. And Morton Bormann, who was deputy to Adolf Hitler, instituted Operation Eagle Flight, which was to take everything worth anything out of Germany. They got scientists out. They got patents out. They got gold, silver, artwork, anything that wasn't nailed down. And he was working in collaboration with the head of the IG Farben Combine and the head of the German Central Bank, Deutsche Bank. And they created thousands of corporations all around the world, usually with some local person, some local resident as a front person, but they controlled these corporations. And then they began to buy up all the corporations, and we've seen the result of this, for example, in our own telecommunications industry. 12 years ago, there was maybe a dozen multinational corporations that controlled the TV, radio, magazines, publishing, everything. And today it's down to six major multinational corporations. They control everything you see and hear. And this is very, very dominant control. This is why we don't know any of this information. And this is also then in other areas, in banking and in commerce. This is why all of the industry of America has been bought up and shipped overseas, because at the heart of this lie the people who were funding the Nazis before, during, and after the war, and they do not have any great regard for the United States of America, and certainly no regard for our free and democratic republic. So they've set out systematically to destroy it, and unfortunately they're doing a pretty good job.
They certainly are, but what would be so fascinating is, first of all, that there were fabulous fortunes. In fact, some people think that the Nazis had found the Templar treasure that came out of Jerusalem in the 13th century, but this was brought to Germany, and it was actually hidden in several places, but it was all eventually taken by the Nazis as 60,000 Nazis moved to South America. That's the figure in Jim's book. I've always thought it was about 10,000, but apparently it was a lot more than that. And there, of course, they moved into Brazil and into Paraguay and into Argentina and into Chile. It's very interesting that the Bush family, which had close ties to the Nazis, to Prescott Bush grandfather, who was actually indicted by our government for his activities in helping the Nazis during the Second World War, they just brought some, 90,000 acres down there in Paraguay. I wonder why. Will you go ahead and pick up the story about the Nazis? Martin Bormann, here's the deputy Adolf Hitler. Everything was done by our government to convince us that he was dead, but he wasn't. He was down there. A wonderful book written by Paul Manning, which I want you to talk about. And then Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo, he was down there as well. And all of these key people, Dr. Mengele, and we never tried to get them. In fact, the CIA did, and working with MI6, did everything they could to help them escape to South America. Why would our CIA have helped the Nazis escape? These people who should have been tried for their terrible, terrible crimes. You pick the story up, Jim.
Well, on one level, the reason that we did not pursue them is that they used the cover of the Cold War. At the end of the war, Hitler's chief of intelligence in the East, in Russia, was a General Reinhard Gehlen. And he came to the United States and cut a deal. He said, you guys are getting ready to square off against the Russians, and you don't know anything about them, but I already have an intelligence network in place, And so if you will grant me, you know, let me come and work for you, I will provide you all the information you need on the Russian capabilities and intentions, etc. He said, now, of course, I don't want you to ever ask me to do anything against my fatherland, Germany, which shows he was an unreconstructed Nazi. And he said, if they ever, once Germany is free again and has its own intelligence service, I want to head it up. And that indeed happened. So it's interesting there that at the very end of the war and going into the late 40s and into the early 50s, just about everything we knew about the Russians and the and their intentions and their capabilities was coming from an anti-communist underground filtered through this Nazi organization. So it's little wonder that we suddenly found ourselves in a Cold War with the idea that the Soviet Union was trying to take over the world. And so at one level they use this to say, well, we've got to work with these Nazis because they are opposed to the communists and, you know, any enemy of our enemy is our friend. And that's how they got a lot of this through and had everybody just kind of in the military and intelligence. They had them go quiet because they convinced them this was necessary in the contingencies of the Cold War. But actually what was going on was that the very same people who had created communism in the first place and then had created the Nazis and now were trying to bring National Socialism into the United States, that was just a convenient excuse for them to bring absolute dyed-in-the-wool Nazis and their philosophy into this country.
And they did, and of course they set up the space program. And then, of course, they also set up the programs for mind control, MK Ultra, was really an outgrowth of that, and some of the experiments were done on certainly on creating new diseases, some of the diseases that plague us today, a byproduct of the Nazi, you know, genetic research programs, biological research programs.
Right.
But what did they do in South America? My understanding from reading your book is that they set up corporations all throughout the world, and some of those major Nazi corporations, now, of course, nobody associates them with the Nazi movement, but they exist today like IG Farben. And what was the tie between IG Farben and Standard Oil, the Rockefeller corporations?
Well, at the very basics, IG Farben, going back to the early part of the 20th century and into the 1920s, was the world's foremost chemical combine. They're the ones who came out with Bayer aspirin. They came out with antibiotics. They were the leaders. And as a result, a lot of the giant pharmaceutical companies today got their start with patents and rights and licenses that they obtained from IG Farben. So it was this way that IG Farben gained such a chokehold over the pharmaceutical industry of the world. Some of the largest today are headquartered out of Switzerland and can be tracked back to the Nazis. So this is, and as they begin to diversify, this is how they learn to use diversification and various corporate fronts to mask their activities from the rest of the world, and they've continued to do that right on up till today. This is why we have a problem today that everyone agrees is just terrible is the in recent years, the increase in teen suicide and the school shootings. And yet, listening to the corporate-controlled mass media in the United States, it all has to do with guns. If we just take guns away from everybody, that would take care of it. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not it at all. I grew up in Texas. We all had guns. We took guns to school occasionally. Nobody ever shot anybody. The problem is not the guns. The problem is the psychotropic drugs that these kids are being put on, and these mind-altering drugs such as Prozac and Ritalin, and they have just, the use of this has grown expeditionally, and parallel we see the rise of these school shootings and teen suicides, and yet the mass media will never mention this. Why? Because pharmaceutical today represents one of, if not the largest, advertiser in the United States. Pick up any news magazine or turn on the TV, and about it, if they're not selling you a truck, they're trying to sell you a drug. I don't know where it got started, Dr. Stan, but you can recall when you never saw a drug ad on television.
Well, I tell you, one of the things you have in your book is a list of all of these mass shootings. Some kid goes on the campus and shoots a half a dozen kids, and their name is there and what drug they're on. They're on, you know, so many of the drugs, psychotropic drugs that are being sold by the drug companies, they create suicidal and homicidal ideology.
That's right. And all this stems from Nazi science and Nazi pharmaceuticals that was brought over here at the end of the war, and then these corporations gained more and more power. In the 1950s, for example, the American Psychiatric Association had only identified about 154 mental conditions, true mental aberrations. Today, that list is like 370-something. You know? Today, they have, social aversion syndrome or something like that, which they want to treat with drugs. We used to call a person who had this a shy person. Said, well, he or she is just shy. And today, it's some sort of a treatable syndrome and the use of drugs is advocated. It's just really gotten out of hand, and there's nobody there to do anything about it because the group, the organization that's supposed to be the referee to protect the public from abuses like this is the United States government. And yet the United States government has come under total control of these people. You see, Dr. Stan, the difference between Nazi Germany and modern America is that in Germany prior to World War II, the state gained control over the corporations, and it was that combination of state and corporate power that is the very definition of fascism. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state, but the end result's the same. You've got, for example, Dick Cheney, who was head of Halliburton and becomes vice president and then is making decisions that leads us into war in Iraq, in which Halliburton and its subsidiaries profit tremendously. You've got Donald Rumsfeld, who, as CEO of Searle back in the 1980s, pushed through the toxic chemical aspartame that is now in all of our diet soft drinks and has been shown to be a leading cause of all kinds of health problems. For 16 years, the federal government refused to certify the use of aspartame until Rumsfeld got into power, and Reagan and Rumsfeld's buddies took over the government, and then he got it through. And so we are now suffering the results of this combination of state and corporate power, which, again, is the very definition of fascism.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about banking, because banking is, of course, one of the major problems we have in the United States today. I mean, the banks seem to be more or less running the government. They've gotten us into this terrible situation as far as the collapse of our economy is concerned. What is the relationship between banking in the United States and international banking and the Nazis?
Well, of course, the banks lie at the core of it, because whoever has all the money and control all the money, hence controls. And you can go all the way back to post-World War I, when they created the Bank of International Settlements, which was supposed to be a coordination effect between these multinational banks to try to get war reparations out of the Germans. But it was quickly taken over by the Nazis. And even today, the Bank of International Settlements is the one that's coordinating a lot of effort. It's the central bank of the central banks. And it's incredible what is going on.
Jim, hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Mars. And we were talking about banking. And, of course, as Jim points out, who was behind Adolf Hitler and the Nazi movement? why it was largely American banks and working in conjunction with German banks and German industrialists and major American corporations. And he lists them in his book. General Motors was there. They had their factories in Germany and all during the Second World War. When, of course, the Germans were killing our boys, why General Motors was building their trucks for them and their tanks, and Ford was there, and ITT was there, International Telephone and Telegraph. They were building the Stuka dive bomber that was being used, of course, to attack our troops. The whole German military was actually created in, you know, in large part, and the material they had came from American corporations over there in Germany. And as Jim points out, it was American banks working in conjunction with British, with German banks that funded Adolf Hitler. That's how he was able to come to power in 1933, and within 5 years he was beginning to challenge the whole world. How could he possibly have done that? Germany was bankrupt. Well, he had friends with a lot of money. And then Jim points out that the same bankers that financed Adolf Hitler financed the communists at the time of the communist revolution. That was, as in the first part of the book, we talked about that last night. But that's why this book is so vitally important, because it gives you the references where you can look into that. And of course, it is the banking interest that's created the collapse of our economy today. And it is basically generation after generation. It's all controlled largely by the same families, isn't it, Jim?
That's correct. Just to show you the connection here, in 1936, Time magazine referred to the Schroeder, Rockefeller, and Company investment bankers as the economic booster of the Rome-Berlin axis. So in other words, it was the Rockefellers working with the Schroeder Bank that was funding the axis, Hitler and the Nazis. Now, these banks that were involved with the Bank of England, and then the Schroeder Bank, Deutsche Bank, Chase Bank, Union Banking Corporation in the United States, City National Bank loaned Germany more than $30 million, and all this was handled through the Bank of International Settlements. And according to the bylaws and the policies of the Bank of International Settlements, these were good old boys, and whether or not the nations went to war with each other, they were above it. They were not, business was to continue as usual. And it was at this level that the war was conducted and war was created, and that the situations and conditions that led to World War II were created by these very people. And until we start figuring out who these people are, what they're doing, what their offspring are doing, what the people today who represent these same bloodline families, these same organizations, these same companies, until we figure out what exactly they're up to and who's doing it, we're just going to keep getting whipsawed around and led into one war after another.
Well, you know, if you could stop and think of it, do you think that if it had come out that Barack Obama's father had been involved with financing Adolf Hitler and had actually been indicted for financing Adolf Hitler, at least the bank he worked for, that Obama could ever been elected president? Well, of course, that isn't true, but the man who preceded him was George W. Bush, and then the two before that was George Herbert Walker Bush. And it is amazing that when both of them ran for the presidency and became the president, it was never any mention at all in the controlled medium about a man named Prescott Bush, who was the grandfather of George W. Bush, the father of George Herbert Walker Bush. What was the tie between Prescott Bush and the Nazi movement, not only before, but during the war? And why was that never mentioned by the media when those two men were running for the presidency?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, that at the time, in I believe it was October, November of 1942, we were like, you know, well into World War II. Prescott Bush was simply stripped of his holdings in Union Banking Corporation that had been representing the Fritz Thyssen money that had funded Hitler, and he was fined some money, and then it was all kind of swept under the rug. Why? Because I'll tell you, here's my suspicion, although what I'm telling you is absolutely true. Prescott, in the summer of 1942, undoubtedly knew they were looking into his business associations with the Nazis. So he might have been, a little bit pro-Nazi, but he certainly was not stupid. He goes out and forms and creates, helps create the United Service Organization, the USO, that was, you know, having been in the Army myself during Vietnam, everyone who's ever been in the service loves the USO. And if you'll recall, during World War II, it was a huge part of the domestic propaganda thing, the USO clubs and USO canteens and the USO girls that would come down.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Jim Morris. We were just talking about Prescott Bush, and apparently when he knew he was going to be indicted for the fact that the firm he was working with, I think it was Brown Brothers Harriman, was actually trading and working with the Nazis well into World War II. This was at least a year after we'd gone to war. Why? He ups and informs the USO. It wasn't that a nice thing for him to do, to help our troops. At the same time, of course, his bank was helping the Nazis. So pick the story up there.
Well, of course, so you can see why that they would have kind of swept the whole issue under the rug and downplayed it, because it would have been a propaganda disaster in the middle of World War II to come out and announce that the man who had helped create the United Service Organization was actually a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis. So I think that was the main reason why they kind of downplayed that, and why it has not been really widespread, it has not been known widely even today.
Well, all the family comes from another secret society called Skull and Bones, which I believe is very much pro-Nazi. In fact, we've done a great deal of research into that, and they have all the swastikas painted on the walls there.
And they sing Deutschland über alles, and all this is reported by U.S. News and World Report. It just doesn't really get to everybody. In fact, Skull and Bones that's just what everybody calls it. The proper name is Chapter 322. Well, whoops, chapter. So it's a chapter of another fraternity. And what other fraternity is that? Well, it was brought over from Germany, and it's quite clearly a chapter of the old Illuminati.
I think you're absolutely right, but the average individual doesn't even know about the Illuminati, or if they do, why they've been conditioned to believe that, you think there's a conspiracy. And I don't think there's a conspiracy. I know there's a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy against God. There is an occult conspiracy. There is a supernatural element these people tie into. And it's about time people begin to understand that nothing happens by accident. Wars don't come about by accident. And certainly what we have seen is the same people, the same families, the same corporations, decade after decade after decade, moving us from one war to the next one, from one depression to the next one, and of course we're in real trouble because of the degree of control that exists over the mass media. I'm just amazed that they published Jim Morris' book. It's a great book, and we recommend it to you. It's called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. We'll be back in just a moment with Jim right here at Radio Liberty. And this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jim Morris. His book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and we actually carry this. You can call our 800 number to order it. We actually carry the first book that he wrote along this line, of Rule by Secrecy. I mean, we've been carrying this probably for 10 years or more. A very important book, and Rule by Secrecy, and now this is sort of a follow-up to the other one, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, that's true. If you read my book, Rule by Secrecy, you'll find that I tracked the modern secret societies all the way back to the ancient secret societies. And, of course, the modern secret societies are the ones that ended up creating, financing, and advancing the career of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. And they are now put the Bushes into power. And when the Bushes crimes and against the Constitution, against the people of the world, and as well as the United States, began to grow a little bit too apparent to everyone, then now we have swapped National Socialism for Marxist socialism, and the same people are in control, because if you look at the lineup of Obama's staff and cabinet, it reads like a who's who membership of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers. And I might also point out that these are the folks who wanted us to go to war with Iran, okay? And they've been working very handily trying to create provocation, trying to line up the propaganda, trying to get everybody propagandized. And why do they want to go to war with Iran? Well, because Iran sits at the hub of the oil-producing nations over there, and if they get hold of Iran, then they pretty well got control over the Middle East. They already got their foothold with Israel, and now they've got control over Iraq, and now if they can go in and get Iran, then they've pretty well got the domination over the that part of the world.
Well, of course, our president, Barack Obama, said he's going to pull our troops out of Iraq, but it appears he's going to pull our troops out of Iraq, and he's going to send them into Afghanistan. Why are we fighting in Afghanistan? What possible purpose is it? Nobody's conquered Afghanistan since Alexander the Great. Shouldn't the other people have tried it? You know, the English have tried it. Genghis Khan tried it. Why are we trying to conquer Afghanistan? And if we win, what have we got?
Well, what we've got is, you see, you have to go back and you have to learn things. You have to study your history. And you're right. You go back and try to find everybody that's tried to conquer Afghanistan, because it sits at the crossroads between the East and the West. And whoever controls Afghanistan can control oil pipelines and all kinds of communication routes, etc. But you go back to the time when the Taliban were in control of Afghanistan, and they were religious zealots, and I don't have a whole lot good to say about them, but they were religious zealots, and they did destroy 90% of the world's heroin industry by destroying 90% of the poppy crop there in Afghanistan, which is the world's chief supplier of poppy, which is, of course, used to produce heroin. We go in there, and you would think, okay, why didn't we just finish off the other 10% and we've won the war on drugs? But no, we didn't do that. We set it up so that today there's more poppy cultivation going on in Afghanistan than even before the Taliban, than ever before. So, number one, we have restored the poppy crop. We have maintained the heroin supply in the world, which, if you go all the way back to the opium wars, you find that that particular drug has been a mainstay of these wealthy elite who profit from the flow of the drug money through the banking systems. So that's one thing. And number two, we were able to secure, under our own terms, the oil and gas pipeline going through Afghanistan that we had been working on. But the Afghans were trying to get a fair share of the profits from that, and we didn't like that. So that's what we've accomplished in Afghanistan.
Well, what about that? You have a chapter in your book on Nazis and mind control. What did the Nazis have to do with mind control in Hitler's Germany, and what did they have to do with mind control in America today?
Well, of course, most people who've watched the History Channel or read books about World War II all know about the horrendous human experiments that were taking place in the concentration camps, where they were finding out everything they could about how much abuse the human body could take, under what conditions could both physical and psychological and intellectual systems be disrupted, changed, altered. They were working on this, and we all know that. Well, what most people don't know is we all know we brought their rocket scientists over to the United States, and they were the foundation of our modern space program by bringing their V-1s and V-2s over here and continuing to design and build rocket ships. What we don't know is that we also brought their mind control experts over here, and using Nazi psychiatry, we have furthered along the techniques to use chemicals and drugs and hypnosis and everything that they could conceive of to try to see how they could alter the human mind and get people controlled One aspect of this, by the way, that it was approved by the German General Staff was the use of fluoride in the water supply of the concentration camps, and they found that a certain percentage of fluoride in the water would keep the inmates passive, dulled down, and less likely to revolt or cause any problem. And now that is really astounding because you turn around and look and realize that there has been an ongoing public controversy over the fluoridation of our water since the 1950s, about the time we were bringing all the German Nazi scientists over to this country, and they were probably undoubtedly sold someone on the idea of fluoridating the water to keep the population dull, down, and passive. And today, about two-thirds of the water supply of the United States contains fluoride, which was, again, a Nazi chemical that they used to pacify whole populations of people.
One of the interesting things that you brought up, which most people are totally unaware of, is the occult connection to NASA, to our space program. What is that all about? Because, you know, what would NASA have to do with the occult and with astrology?
Well, that's a very good question.
That's why I asked it.
The thing is, we don't know exactly why they're doing that. All we know is that it is absolutely true that most of the important NASA space launches, and of course, if you think about it, they all carried names like Mercury and Apollo and Neptune, and you know, they all had this orientation to the constellations. But what most people don't realize is that almost all of our major space missions, the time and date of the launching of these missions was set not due to any scientific criteria, but to the alignment of the stars, the alignment of the constellations. Now, here's the thing, Dr. Stan. It really doesn't matter whether you or I want to believe in this astrological aspect to life. The point is, somebody does, and that somebody is powerful enough and in a high enough position to set the time and date of major U.S. space missions. And it wasn't just here. We're now finding out that the same thing was going on in Russia. Okay? So now we see evidence that perhaps there's been a covert third space program. While the Russians were building heavy lift rockets that could carry big payloads, we were building lighter rockets, but we were designing all of the guidance systems and all the computer software to really make them work. And, of course, if you combine the two, then you've got a really far-reaching space program, and there does seem to be some contact between the Nazi scientists that were working in Russia and the Nazi scientists working in the United States. And then when you understand that at the very top of the power pyramid were at the level of the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and these international banking families and organizations, that they crossed over. They were lending money to the Russians. They were working closely with the Russians. One example is our ambassador to Russia during World War II was Averell Harriman. And, of course, it was the Harriman families that were the mentors of the Bush family. And the Bushes had all worked for Brown, Harriman, et cetera. And it's at that level where they were getting input from both space programs and perhaps funding and creating a third covert space program being run by these Nazis.
And I think it's so vitally important is people understand behind everything going on today, there's the occult, and Jim has a very interesting section in his book about the occult background of the NASA program. You probably have never heard of it, but you can go up on the internet, as I just did, and type in Parsons. That's for Jack Parsons. He was the head of NASA for many years. And then type in the occult, and of course you will. So Parsons, NASA, the occult, and they'll take you to all sorts of information about the occult emblems that were there, the secret ceremonies that were held, the Masonic connections to the NASA program. But, of course, you out there and the common people out in the audience, you're not smart to understand this, and that's why they have to suppress it, because you might begin to catch a glimpse of what's really going on. if you were to be given the full picture and understand that even the space program, our space program working with the Russian space program, and all, of course, founded in the occult. Now, what about the section you have in there on the Kennedys and what was going on?
Well, the Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, probably understood fairly well about what was really going on, because his father, Joseph P. Kennedy, had been basically fired as ambassador to Britain because of his pro-Nazi statements. He had aligned himself with the British royals, and they were all pretty much in favor of Hitler and the Nazis. And as the war approached, and as it became clear that we were going to be enemies to the Nazis, then they brought Joseph P. Kennedy home. So his son Jack probably knew some of this stuff. And when he became president of the United States, I think his biggest mistake was to really believe that he was president of the United States, because he began to take steps to try to correct some of this stuff. He began to try to curtail the power of the Federal Reserve System, the banking system that pretty much controls our economy. He also tried to shut down the war in Vietnam, which was totally against what the Council on Foreign Relations wanted, because they had already written papers detailing how we need to gain control over the mineral resources of Southeast Asia. He was doing all kinds of things to contract and to control the excesses of the multinational corporations. And as a result, that put him at loggerheads with Wall Street and with these very high-level financial powers that we've been talking about. And I think the clincher came in June of 1963, when Kennedy ordered $4.2 billion in currency issued, not through the Federal Reserve System that we have to pay interest to, but through the United States Treasury, which we do not have to pay interest to. Thus, Kennedy became the second U.S. president in U.S. history to issue money that was interest-free and not tied to the international bankers.
And what happened to the first president who did that?
Well, the first president to try that was Abraham Lincoln, when he issued greenbacks to finance the war between the states. And Dr. Stan, I don't believe that it was just sheer coincidence that both of those presidents were shot in the head in public.
And ladies and gentlemen, as difficult as it is for you to believe this sort of thing, these things are really going on. This is why we are so fortunate, first of all, to have an occasional book like Jim's that will come out here, the book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and it's well documented, all sorts of books and references there for each chapter where you can look up the information. And I don't question this, because I've read much of this myself, books that are actively suppressed here in the United States. Why? Because they just don't want you to know, because they control the media. They control the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, PBS, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and that's why you never, or almost never, are going to get the truth there. And that's what I do, what, five hours a day of talk radio, and today it'll be 6 hours. I did a program at 5 o'clock, this, I guess 6 o'clock this morning as well. But anyway, Chris, and this I'm sure why Jim writes his books, because he wants to get the information out. And it's there, and all the documentation is there. You've got to find out whether it's true or not. And if it is true, then you have an obligation to be involved, because, of course, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, how powerful is this Nazi network across the world today, Jim, in your estimation?
Well, I think it's more powerful than probably any of us would suspect or certainly like to know. I mean, I was aware of the Nazi peril, I guess you could say, going back decades. I'd read several books about how the Nazis had all gone to South America, and of course you can even see that reflected in our media. There's been some good movies, The Boys from Brazil, and the one with Dustin Hoffman about the dentist, the Nazi dentist. But this has all been a little of this, a little of that, and generally we were inclined to just think, well, it's just some old Nazi holdovers that were holed up down in Argentina or Paraguay or somewhere. But no, they are operating now worldwide, and they have now expanded far beyond German Nazis. These are now national socialists that are in positions of power all around the world, and they're working very hard to create their worldwide socialism. But, of course, they don't want one world government, because then they can't play one nation or one economic block off against another. That what they want is one world socialism broken into perhaps three economic blocks. We have the European Union is already in existence. They're working very hard to create the North American Union, which would be the combining the economies of Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And then at some future time, it'd be real easy to create an Asian Union, because most of the Asian nations are all under the very tight control of just a handful of people, and you either buy them up or buy them out or put them on the board, and then, you know, right away you could have an Asian Union. And then we're right to the situation that we were told about back in 1948 by George Orwell, who wrote 1984, and that's exactly what we see as the plan for these global socialists, which is to create a one-world socialist system broken into three economic blocks that they play off against each other continually to create the tension necessary for maximum profits and control of the population.
And war after war after war after war.
Right.
We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, Jim, we've got 3 minutes before I have to let you go. What are the messages you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight? What is really important today? And certainly the Nazi movement, though, as you describe it, still has its foundation in the occult. Do you believe that?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's still, there's still occult overtones to all of this. And this is why it's so important that people start paying closer attention to the UFO issue, because there, you know, through most of my lifetime, I was told there is no such thing as UFOs. Those are just hallucinations or some sort of psychosis. And of course, you never hear that anymore, because today, with the advent of the camcorder and digital cameras and cell phones that take pictures, there's not a week goes by that somebody's not posting pictures of UFOs. So there's definitely something going on. It's something, I started to say supernatural, but I don't want people to misunderstand. I'm not saying that it's a ghost or something. I'm saying it is something outside the normal human experience. And again, this brings us to the occult. And again, since we can now know that someone with the power to set our space missions is doing that with regards to an astrological alignment of the constellations, then we have to realize that it doesn't matter whether or not we believe in this stuff. The point is, they do. And so we must make ourselves aware, and we must start arming ourselves with truth so that we can stand up against this insidious plan to tyrannize the entire world.
And, of course, they're really well on their way towards accomplishing their ultimate goal. And now that we're involved in this terrible financial contraction that is really going to wreck the economy of the United States and wreck the economy of the whole world, and production is shutting down all across the world, what do you think is going to happen here in the next year or two, Jim?
Well, unfortunately, what I see happening is the same, because we're talking about all these same people and how they've been pulling the same thing. You can look at the parallels. In Germany in January 1933, it was a free and democratic republic, the Weimar Republic. And then at the end of the month, the Reichstag, their parliament, caught fire. Hitler, who was only the chancellor at the time, kind of like our vice president, said, hey, this was communist terrorist. We've had a terrorist attack. Give me the power, and I'll take care of this. And they rushed through the Enabling Act.
Hey, we're out of time, Jim. God bless. Thanks
very
much
for
being with us.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest has been Jim Mars. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with him. We think his information is vitally important. So certainly we are going to be carrying his book. It's called The Rise of the Fourth Reich. If you haven't read his book entitled The Rule by Secrecy, we recommend that as well. So Rule by Secrecy, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. If you want more information, we have Ted Flynn's book, which, of course, is excellent. And then we have my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And these will give you an excellent overview of the occult forces that rule the governments, that rule the world, and control international banking. This is what you have to understand. People have certainly given themselves over to the dark side and gotten great wealth and power. If you've never seen the DVDs which we carry, they sold their souls for rock and roll. It goes into the music industry. And how many of these people have actively given themselves over to the prince of this world and have then accumulated great wealth and fortune and fame. But, of course, so many of them have died at a young age. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour presentation. Yes, we have a 10-hour presentation. You will never look at the world through the same eyes again, and exactly the same thing goes on in banking and finance and corporations and, yes, in government itself. You need, of course, to get the new DVD we have, The Eye of the Phoenix. It's the third in the Secret Mysteries set, and, of course, we have Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and the third in the series, The Eye of the Phoenix, which goes into the occult emblems on the back of the dollar bill. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are occult emblems there. They were put there by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president who began to pack the Supreme Court with Masons, who would then take God and prayer out of our schools because they worship a different God. They worship the universal God, the great architect of the universe. They hate the God of the Bible. And in every country they're in, they have a different Bible. You know, if they're in a Muslim country, they have a Muslim Bible. In an Indian country, they have an Indian Bible. They are not a Christian organization because the real force behind them is the prince of this world, Lucifer himself. These are Luciferian organizations. This is why you need to get our material. And then, of course, we have a great DVD, a talk that Chris Pinto had given when he was our guest here. And Chris actually created these three DVDs we talked about, Secret Mysteries, Riddles in Stone, Eye of the Phoenix. But he gave a talk called The Atlantis Connection. America was to be the new Atlantis, and we were to use our military and financial power to bring back Atlantis and to bring about a one-world government. That was their goal. That was their objective then. That is their goal today. And then, of course, we have the excellent DVD, talk by Constance Cumby, called The Emergence. We have a four-tape set of my, or four-CD set of my conversations with her, interviews, called The Aquarian Conspiracy. We have so many DVDs out there. Certainly, if you've never gone to the background of how they murdered Martin Luther King, how they assassinated him, we have a four-tape set that goes into the trial brought by the King family against a gentleman who is part of the conspiracy, the government conspiracy to murder Martin Luther King. It's called The Assassination or The Execution of Martin Luther King. There's a book written by William Pepper, who was the lawyer who represented the King family, called An Affair of State. His first book, Orders to Kill, you can't even find it up on the Internet. It's very hard to come by. Why? Because they do not want you to know the truth. We have a great four-tape set or CD set on the sinking of the USS Liberty, where they set our ship over, our intelligence-gathering ship, off the coast of the Sinai in 1967. The idea was to kill all of the American servicemen on board, to sink the ship, to kill all of the servicemen, and then to use that as a justification to go to war with Egypt. Fortunately, God intervened. They failed. But those people on board, these men, many of them, over 170 were wounded, and 35, 36 were killed. They were threatened with death if they ever revealed what really happened. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency